And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, the other day you told me that Dr. Oz was running for the Senate nomination in Pennsylvania. I thought you were kidding, to be honest with you. I didn't realize that this guy really was entering the Republican primary, that he really had hired Dave Irving, the Trump, Pennsylvania Trump campaign manager.
Dave Urban.
Irvin, sorry. In other words, you know, he's getting some real professional heavy hitter
right
behind him. And of course, there's not, except for me, there's probably nobody in Pennsylvania who doesn't know the guy's name. So he's a serious guy, right? I mean, at least he's a serious candidate. He may not be serious in a political sense, but then everybody that I talked to in those days thought Ronald Reagan running for governor wasn't serious.
Yeah, this is, I guess, and you probably started with Ronald Reagan, or maybe George Murphy before him, you know, celebritocracy. Is that something that we're talking about?
Yeah.
That's only accelerated since in the age of Trump. You know.
Well, we've had great celebrities who've run for office, but they were military guys. You know, Eisenhower was no political guy. He was a general. But he was a great, you know, he was the great general of the World War II. He was a celebrity. People didn't even know if he was a Republican or a Democrat.
Right. Yeah, well, of course, there was a long line of generals, starting with a guy named Washington.
Yeah, right, exactly.
who were famous. Certainly fame and name recognition is generally a big help to someone. And again, there's been a long line, Arnold Schwarzenegger. But now it's coming from areas that are, you know, of entertainment rather than academic or other types of achievement.
But what's the difference? Achievement is achievement. If your point is I got talent, I achieved something, therefore I can achieve anything, then what's the difference what you achieved?
Yeah, and that kind of shakes up the Republican primary for Senate. The Trump designee Sean Parnell had to suspend his campaign because the judge came down and said he was an abuser to his family. And so everything is wide open. And Oz obviously had been looking at this for a long time. Of course, we remember the analogy. The Wizard of Oz was really all show and, you know, just a small man behind the curtain when you got to it.
Oz has entered the campaign, as I understand it, with ads that point out that he's all for personal freedom.
Right.
And the Democrats are taking away your freedoms. They're forcing you to get vaccinated. He'll put an end to that kind of thing, right? That's his shtick, right?
Yeah, well, he said Washington had taken away your freedom.
Yeah, but everybody knows what that means as the Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah,
he didn't mean Trump.
Well, the establishment.
Yeah.
You know, he's another one of these guys that rails against the elite. Of course, he went to Harvard and University of Pennsylvania and things like that. Pay no attention to my credentials when I attack people who've been educated like I have.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. But you know, so his thing really is that you need to take personal responsibility for your life, and that, in fact, that's the only thing that counts, right? They're taking away your freedom by forcing you to be vaccinated, which is preposterous, which is nonsense, which turns you into a commodity, which says you are no more than a commodity. Your personal health, my personal health, everybody's personal health is just a commodity that you buy. And if you choose wisely and buy it properly, you'll be healthy. And if you don't choose wisely, you won't buy it properly, you'll die. But in any case, it's up to you. Public health doesn't work that way.
Well, society doesn't work that way.
But they deny that society exists. These are all people who live in Margaret Thatcher's world. There is no such thing as society. There are only individuals.
Right. Right. There's only trees, no forest.
That's right. Well put. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And, of course, forests are entire ecosystems.
Yes, but they don't exist either, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, it's an extension of that. But
it's a complete denial of reality. It's not a question of belief. It's just a denial of reality. You may believe that reality doesn't exist, but if you manage to step out of a window at the 15th floor, you're going to die.
Yeah, but for the first 14 floors, everything looks pretty good.
And in fact, the falling isn't what matters. It's really the stopping that matters.
That's correct. That's correct. So, so he's in. And of course, the first issue is the fact that he's a carpetbagger. He wrote an op-ed.
I mean, he doesn't live here.
He lives in Bergen County, New Jersey. Although his in-laws have a place that he voted from in the last election in Pennsylvania.
It's like Christian Science. You don't have to be treated directly by a doctor. The doctor can be 1,000 miles away and think about you, and the treatment will work.
Well, right now, we do have more and more people being treated by doctors over Zoom and things like that. But anyway, I was starting to say that he wrote an op-ed explaining his candidacy, and he didn't write for the Philadelphia Inquirer or the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He put it in the Washington Post.
Really?
But yeah. One of the reactions, I think, the bolsters is was from one of the senators from one of the Dakotas, Senator Kramer, who said, "Well, he's our perfect kind of candidate. He's self-funded and he's got 100% name recognition."
There you go. Because because these guys see politics as no different than marketing Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Now, it's going to be interesting as to how much he gets roughed up during the primary. I haven't seen any polling yet, but there's a couple other people that are self-funded that aren't quite as well-known, Carla Sands and Dave McCormick, who also run into the problems of being from out of the state. It's interesting that all these folks are running in Pennsylvania, and not where they really live. So Pennsylvania is going to be a very hot battleground come the fall. Sometimes primaries can wound you and your candidacy fatally. And other times they can make you better and stronger. We don't know what's going to happen when they get to the debates or if they're going to debate or whatever to see what happens in May for the primary election.
Are there any other candidates besides McCormick and Sands and Oz that matter on the Republican side?
Well, there was Jeff Bartos, who ran for lieutenant governor a couple of years ago. So he's there. I don't know. The rest of them are fairly small, unknown names, or only names in Republican, politics.
But so based on what we're looking at now, it looks like there's a three-way competition for the Trump vote, and that's a two-way competition, Sands and Oz, maybe Bartos. It seems to me that the McCormick, he's more a corporate Republican, right? He's not really a Trump type.
But he's looking for the Trump backing as well.
Well, they're all looking for it, right.
Yeah, and of course his
but
background.
Maybe he would go the route of the guy in Virginia.
Yeah, he's a hedge fund guy.
Yeah,
he's got and he does have more ties to Pennsylvania certainly than Oz ever did. I always thought that with his credentials, he'd made a better gubernatorial candidate for Pennsylvania than senatorial. But
well, maybe the Republicans have given up on the governor's race.
I'm not so sure. They're all jumping in. By the way, this week, we've got the three people now from the Republican Senate, but Mike Terzai, the former Speaker of the House, indicated that he's going to jump into the race for governor. as well. So we're just going to have to see. The Democrats cleared that for Josh Shapiro, and it's not going to be a cakewalk. Although there, you know, this week we might have had, and it gets back to Dr. Oz, a game changer. Certainly, the Democrats are looking at it as such, and that is the argument in the Roe versus Wade case that was brought up by the Mississippi changing the number of weeks that they could downward that they could prohibit abortions or restrict abortions in any event. You know, and it's not just Roe versus Wade, by the way. It's Casey versus, the Casey case that has been really the law of the land for the last quarter century. So, you know, it's pretty clear from the arguments of the Supreme Court that Roe versus Wade is going to be fundamentally altered, if not totally taken out. But the disingenuousness, if that's a word, of the Republicans on this issue and the ones on the court was pretty well shown. You know, during their nominations process, they all kind of bobbed and weaved and talked about precedent and this or that.
They all lied. Yeah. Clarence Thomas, who has always opposed the right of abortion, said when he was being considered for confirmation, "I haven't thought about abortion." The man had at that point had a history of opposing the right of abortion, and he's been a foremost campaigner himself against the right of abortion, and his wife, in her own right, is a foremost campaigner against the right of abortion.
But
he claimed he didn't know about it, and in his questions, what did he do in his questions? He alleged he tried to ask, well, what is the constitutional argument? As if there could be, as if he was sincerely interested in finding the constitutional argument for the right of abortion.
Well, the interesting part is, you know, they're looking, they say, well, where is the right of abortion in the Constitution? And of course, it isn't explicit because the founders had nothing really to say about abortion in those days. And it certainly, for the most part, wasn't illegal in those days.
It was legal up until almost the 20th century. And was, and it was bad. It was badly done because medicine was badly done. But in the 19th century, it was a common practice.
Yeah. I forget which justice asked, well, where do we find that in the Constitution?
I think that was Thomas.
Yeah. And that's a very interesting question because, you know, you can shoot back, well, where did we find the right for individuals to marry people of different races, Judge Thomas?
Excuse me, where did we find the right for the Congress to appropriate money to buy tanks?
Right. Well, those are, one, you're talking about the government's ability to function. And the other, you're talking about personal rights. And there's all sorts of personal rights. As I said, you know, Loving versus Virginia, up until then, the states could prohibit interracial marriage.
And did.
Griswold versus Connecticut.
And did.
Where they could prohibit birth control for married couples. You know, all of these, the court said, look, these are privacy rights. Remember, Robert Bork lost his nomination because he got up and said, I don't think that there's a right of privacy in the Constitution. I think most Americans would say that's maybe one of the most foremost rights. I'm currently writing an article for Bill of Rights Day that's going to run in a couple of weeks. And, you know, I noted the Ninth Amendment specifically says that there are rights that are not enumerated here. And the reserve for the people. So the right of privacy is one of them. You know, there's no explicit right for voting in the Constitution, but it's there's some implicitness there as well. But you know, the Democrats say if Roe versus Wade is overturned, it will give them impetus, the women and whatever. I'm not so sure. I think that's the way it's going to play out. And the Republicans are the ones who want to take over the legislature Mitch McConnell in the Senate and the Republican leader, the what I call the invertebrate Republican leader in the House, might be a little bit worried about the outcome of that case. We're going to have to see how it shakes out.
Well, before we leave it, I want to point out that the questioning was so disgusting on the part of so many of them. Take Kavanaugh. Yeah. Kavanaugh, according to Susan Collins, Kavanaugh assured Susan Collins that he would live up to precedent and that as far as he was concerned, settled law was not to be touched. And Roe versus Wade was settled law. But in the questioning, Kavanaugh denied all of that. And Kavanaugh said that there's plenty of settled law that was overturned in American sure. history, and all for the better. And so why should we be tethered right. to settled law? That was the only reason he got onto the damn court, was because he argued that he'd hold on to settled law. Where's Susan Collins? Did she come up and say, I got lied to by this guy? She was the deciding vote.
Well, let me tell you. There are two things about that. One is when we've overturned precedent, like in Brown versus Board of Education overturned Plessy versus Ferguson, we expanded people's rights. This case, we would be contracting the rights of women. So that should have been said to Justice Kavanaugh.
I think it was. I think the woman who represented the Solicitor General made that very point in response to Kavanaugh.
Okay, I didn't hear the full argument.
Yeah.
The other thing, poor question came from the newest member, Amy Coney Barrett.
Oh, she had the most brutal discussion.
Well, she said, what's the big deal? There's always adoption.
She went further than that. She said, what's the big deal? Why do you assume that parenting and birthing are the same process? You could give birth, drop the newborn off at the police station and be done with it.
Right. Yeah. Never mind the consequence of carrying a baby who's the product of rape. Never mind risking your life in pregnancy.
And never mind the fact that whether you're dropping the kid off at the police station or giving the kid up for adoption, you're still a mother.
Yes, you're still a mother. And the psychological effects of that.
Yeah.
Or how much, you know,
privacy.
Right. And if you have difficulties, for instance, in the pregnancy and have to stop working, the effect that has on the rest of your family.
Yeah.
Things like that are just blind to that. And this, you know, this gets back into, you know, the Republicans talk about elitism. Certainly those members of the court live in some rarefied world where they don't relate to these things. The real lives of ordinary people just don't seem to matter that much.
And this brings me to an important point. Tangential, but also central to this, tangential to the actual argument, but central to the whole strategy. The strategy of the pro-abortion right movement has been to rely on the courts, which means that you have to rely on people like Coney Barrett, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and such. And they abandoned conscious decision, abandoned local organizing in the states. And within the states and local organizing, you know, the kind of organizing you do if you try to run for county commissioner, you know, talk to your neighbors. They abandoned it for 40 years. They spent no money on it. They allocated no resources to it. They trained up no organizers. They just didn't do it because they were concentrating on court challenges. And it didn't work. It's a horrible strategy. You've got to organize among the people. Yeah, the right wing did. The right wing built a mass base behind phony science and insane theology.
Yeah. You've heard me say here repeatedly that the Democrats have become enthralled with the presidency and the top down. And as you say, they've forgotten the grassroots and the grassroots up. I've also talked about, and I've lectured for at least 20 years now, about what I call the think tank strategy, the Lewis Powell memo, where he talked about developing ideas and thinking long term and learning how to communicate, things like that. And the investment that the right wing has done in institutions like that, like the Federalist Society, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute. And of course, this week there was a report from the Center for Media and Democracy, and they outlined how much money just Charles Koch-related foundation and institute have given over the past year or so.
Two
affiliated groups 1 year have given $149.2 million. $21 million of that went to George Mason University. And we've spoken before about the book Democracy in Chains, Nancy McLean's expose about how that is the epicenter of this movement and developing ideas and a philosophy, what have you, so that the minority can maintain control over the will of the majority. They've also, you know, helped fund the Federalist Society, the Cato Institute, all these other, you know, kind of front organizations that write appellate briefs to the Supreme Court that give them reasoning when they have the majority or the appeals courts, that give them a reasoning to hold the way they did. Even over $500,000 to ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which goes out and propagandizes state legislators.
But they also write the laws for them.
They write the laws for them. There's model laws that they've got. Some of these anti-abortion laws are come out of ALEC.
Not some, almost all. Almost
yeah.
all.
And it's like a franchise. We developed the recipe, and here it is. And, you know, they try it in the legislature, and if it fails, they tweak it and they till they get it right. And then they take it to another state and another state. As a trial lawyer, I've seen this on the issue of tort reform. That's where my interest has come in, but it's a far broader thing that I've seen, and it's as you said, there's no real equivalency on the other side. The Democrats just don't invest in this. The unions have, but the unions keep losing power, and they can't make up for it. Some of these millionaires on their own, you know, the Mercers or the late Sheldon Adelson could throw in a huge amount of money. I saw this week that Mike Bloomberg is throwing in hundreds of millions of dollars into charter schools, which would undercut the teachers' unions.
And he's a Democrat.
Well, he is when he wants to be.
Right.
He's been a Democrat, a Republican, and an Independent. He's covered the bases. The only thing he hasn't been is green. Where you have that vast concentration of wealth, that can do these things, that's a big problem. That's a big problem. And, we get back to the celebrities, but we've seen it, these oligarchs and plutocrats, I guess we're talking about, who have made a lot of money, like Berlusconi in Italy, taking over things for their own benefit. Trump,
Berlusconi.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The guy in Brazil, the same way.
Bolsonaro.
What we find out, most of them wind up being kleptocrats. They're grifters. They make their money. They do have organizations, but a lot of times they cheat. And what they want to do, in my opinion, is, and this goes back to Bannonism now, Steve Bannon, is they want to get rid of all of the guardrails, and they want to get rid of all the rules and regulations so that they can cheat at will. That's what Putin's done in Russia. He can, there's nobody to stop him, so he can loot the whole treasury of Russia. For him,
well, we're in a very bad position because here in this country, in our country, we, you know, our party system is not really the parties are not organizations as they are in the rest of the world. The Democratic Party and also the Republican Party, these are not membership organizations with a democratic inner life. Right. These are franchises. These are electoral franchises, and anybody who captures the franchise by winning the primary, that it's his party. He or she can do what they want with it. The average voter votes habitually. He or she, the average voter, doesn't necessarily know or care about who the candidate is or what the program is. And most of the times, the program's nobody knows what the program is. And in no time is it possible for the average person in the community to affect the program. And in any case, the elected people are not bound by the program. So these are not democratic institutions. These are just electoral franchises. And we have a situation in which you fundamentally have no organization in a society that doesn't run except through organization. So money talks, because money creates temporary organizations to favor the people who own the money.
And that gets back to the Citizens United case.
Yeah, it certainly does get back to that. And it shows that if you want to change public policy and you don't do local organizing, you're going to lose. It's just that simple. And the Democrats are not, they may win the next cycle or they may not win the next cycle. It's irrelevant. The point is they're not going to change the habits of people in the communities in one cycle of elections, in the 2-year cycle. It doesn't work that way. It takes years to inculcate the habits, the loyalties, and the government and the party has to stand for something that the people want and need. And if they don't, then it's just consumerism. And you're right back to where you started from. Stacey Abrams announced that she's running for governor. Stacey right. Abrams has 15 years history of organizing in the community. She might win, or it might be stolen from her again, as Kemp stole it from her the first time.
Yeah. Well, Kemp stole it from her during the election. He stole it from her before the election when he was able to disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of people.
Right.
That's where it came from. That's where Republicans have been trying to work. That was just one of the attacks. Now they've got different attacks where they're going to try to put people in place who won't count the votes right. But in this last election in Georgia, the Democrats flipped 48 offices. You don't read about that. A lot of them could have been small, but they are the organized. It shows the organizing that they had to do.
In my county, in the just concluded elections, there was we had, I don't know how many hundreds of seats that were open, all local seats. The Democrats put up almost no candidates for any of them. None.
Right.
None.
You know, the last person that had the right idea was Howard Dean.
Yeah, and the Democratic Leadership Council got rid of them. The people who have run the Democratic Party since the 1980s have been a disaster for the common people of this country. It's just that simple. They just have not paid attention to their needs, they haven't serviced their needs, and they keep losing elections.
And that's why we've seen this shift in places like Luzerne County.
Yeah.
Where books have been written about that.
That's right. There's no reason why these rural counties shouldn't be bastions for progressive thought. They are the ones most suffering from the way the exploiters of the society, the looters of the economy, the rapers of the environment, they're the ones who are suffering in the first instance. We've got a county, Susquehanna County, the largest producer of natural gas in the nation, none of that wealth accrues to the county. Nothing. There's a county of poverty and potholes, while the big gas extracting company here takes out $2 billion untaxed dollars a year from just this one county.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're done for this week.
We're done for this week. Hanukkah will be done.
Yep.
Very shortly, and we'll see what happens next week. It's been an interesting week so far, and we're going day to day.
Day to day. See you next week.
See you next week. See you next week.